Labor Day deals are looking good at Lowe's. Save $10 on 1 gallon cans and $50 on 5 gallon pails of select interior paint via rebate. Plus, get two 2.5 quart or 3 quart Mums for just $8. A fresh look and savings? Even better. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Mum sizes vary by location and exclude Alaska and Hawaii. See store at Lowe's.com for more details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
News programs from around the globe each week.
Oh, he needs psychological help. Somebody is definitely disturbed. Somebody needs to go see a therapist.
Shut the fuck up. Put a sock in your mouth, do your own research, and leave everybody else alone then. You ain't no intellectual, you're an emotional vagabond. Magic's role in the modern world has long unsettled intellectuals and social theorists. You're not some special person, okay? As a matter of fact, if you don't question this kind of stuff, you're not an intellectual at all. You're just kind of an idiot. Hey, Sam Altman, generate this, bitch. I'm one of those crazy people who believes without a shadow of a doubt that somebody in Western society is casting spells on basically the entire population. I don't know if it's government. I don't know if it's the CIA, some global intelligence web. I don't know who it is. I don't know where it's coming from. I think everybody can do it. And so in a way, I kind of believe that there is more than one party that's doing it. But I genuinely believe that there is magic at work in the air all around us at any given time. I believe that there are a lot of different parties that are intentionally inflicting us with their magical capabilities. I believe government is one of those conglomerates that is sort of subjecting us to this reality that is filled with mysticism and dark arts and magic and spells and symbolism that does indeed cause us harm. Maybe even sound-based magics like the Enochian magics and symbolism that keeps us in a sort of like spell, sort of in a trance. And I think that it impacts every element of our reality. I think that it designs the reality that we live in. As we know it, it is the sort of governing force. It keeps us addicted, it keeps us tired, it keeps us frustrated, it keeps us needing to be, it keeps us in this place where we believe that we have to be slaves in order to survive. It keeps us in this state of consciousness where we believe we can't escape, where we lose hope, where we are constantly subjected with negative thoughts and the need to consume and the need for the next thing or whatever it is. It puts us in places where we abandon what we truly love, what we care about, and who we really are. And it convinces us to abandon God and abandon the things that are considered right and good in the world, and turns us into something darker and more malleable and more manipulable. It turns us into little NPCs and peons that can be pushed about here and there and hither and thither to basically complete the project and bring about the end game that the powers that be want us to bring about, so that they can ultimately maintain control and get rid of a bunch of us and maintain control through that too. It sends you scam calls, it does all sorts of stuff. No, I'm just kidding. But they do all sort of the magic that I'm talking about, the spells that I'm referencing. They keep you entranced, they keep you enchanted, they keep you subjected to the way of the world so that you forget all about what you really are as a human being, as a partial spiritual being, as a partial, you know, as a child of God, a divine creation, all of these things. And they imprison you, these magics do, this enchantment does. It imprisons you in a world where you see no escape and where you constantly live in a realm of despair and hopelessness and the feeling of being trapped or mindlessness, where you don't see what's going on. Your discernment is stolen from you. Your intelligence is squandered. Your potential is wasted because they need cogs for their machine and they need livestock for their consumption. And I truly believe that so much of this is achieved through dark magics and pagan crafts. And so in this video, I'm going to go over how magic has persisted, even though they say that it doesn't exist, how magic has persisted through time, what it looks like today, and how we can recognize it, where it got lost along the way, where it reappeared, and what to do about it. Okay? Here we go. When the modern social sciences began developing in the 19th century, there were a lot of scholars who assumed that belief in magic and the supernatural would eventually disappear, would just fizzle out. And they believed that as a society became more scientific, more educated, you could say, more industrialized, and more rational, that people would just naturally leave these older pagan beliefs behind, these older concepts of magic and angels and demons and gods. But in the early 20th century, there was a guy, his name was Max Weber, and he famously, it was famous if you're into this sort of thing. If you're not, you'll probably just be one of those guys who's like, ooh, he needs to get some mental help because he read a book. Well, maybe you should read one before Amazon gobbles them all up and tells you what you can and can't know. Okay. Max Weber, he famously described this process called disenchantment. And this is a pretty big concept because it literally means that something close to removing the magic is occurring. Something almost completely removing the magic is occurring. Weber believed that modern capitalism and bureaucracy and science and just your general man becoming more intelligent or thinking in a more acceptable, normal, rational fashion would gradually push the supernatural and any explanations of the supernatural out of everyday life. And people could just get back to spending money, man. People could just get back to doing whatever people do when they're not focused on the fact that they're living in a spiritual realm. It's like 1,000 degrees in here. I got to take off some of this headwear. This is actually just a shirt. This hat hurts my head so much. Where was I? Other theories of secularization basically said the same thing. Essentially that religion might survive, but mainly it would be a source of morality or inspiration for each individual person. Magic, spirits, supernatural forces, occult practices, pagan stuff like that, gods and angels, they were just expected, the whole concept of them, to slowly die away because modern people would supposedly recognize these things as stupid or irrational, not very intelligent to believe in. But the thing is, the prediction never really came true. And what they said never actually, what they theorized, never actually happened. There's a guy, his name is Edward B. Tyler. He's one of the founders of modern anthropology, and he believed that civilization was moving beyond superstition and magical thinking. At the same time, even he recognized that these beliefs stubbornly were surviving. He thought they were disappearing, but for some reason, people continued to believe in them. There were old practices that continued even inside the modern nations, even inside the modern churches, while entirely new superstitions actually were appearing alongside them. So in other words, as people moved along through society and as people became, quote, more rational, according to these types, not only were the beliefs not disappearing, but there were more beliefs formulating on the trend of magic and superstition and spirituality. Now, by the early 20th century, psychologists were becoming a thing, and they were increasingly looking at magical thinking as a problem of the human mind. They explained that superstition and those types of things were more like elements of bad observation. They were examples of faulty reasoning or some kind of emotional desire, basically the concept that people perceive what they want to perceive. They see what they want to see. And that's what psychologists were pretty much saying about magic and superstition. Instead of saying that spirits and supernatural forces were responsible for something, psychology would do absolutely anything to prove that they had this alternative explanation that everything that was going on was happening inside the human mind. And this is where things get really interesting, because in essence, the experts began to argue that psychology actually absorbed parts of what ancient cultures once understood through magic. They began to pull from the reasonings of ancient philosophers who believed in magic and began to attribute that to psychology. So all the language and the explanations for the thing might have changed, but some of the basic questions of psychology were the basic questions of magic, superstition, and spirituality. They were remarkably similar. And then by the middle of the 19th century, science was becoming enormously powerful culturally. There was this huge cultural shift towards science and more modern explanations for life and what's wrong with me, etc., where I came from. At the same time, the new social sciences were trying to explain why human beings were still believing in superstition and magic. Why have we not evolved out of this? Where are the people coming from that believe all of this kind of stuff? Why do the beliefs keep forming, and why are they becoming stronger? Why is magic and superstition still here? Are we not evolved animals? Now, because scholars believe that both superstition and magic came from similar mistakes in human reasoning, the distinction between superstition and magic began disappearing. And there's this guy, his name was Ludwig Feuerbach, and he provides a pretty good example. He wrote a book in 1851 called Lectures on the Essence of Religion. It's pretty dry, but he basically connected religion, superstition, and magic. And he argued that underneath all of this was this basic human desire to essentially just influence or control nature, which isn't necessarily wrong. That is kind of what magic is, right? They want to take stuff outside of the realm of normal possibilities and do magic so that they get a desired result. There's this other dude named Friedrich Schleiermacher, and I'm not really going to get into all the stuff that all of these different weird Germans said, but just know it's all coming from weird Germans. But this Schleiermacher fellow, he argued that human beings possess something like a natural religious sense. You could call it a soul if you wanted. He called it a special organ of religion. And Feuerbach mocked the idea that Schleiermacher presented, and he said that perhaps human possessed a special organ of superstition instead, because for some reason that sounded better. For Feuerbach, superstition grew from ignorance. It came out of fear and dependency. It came from the imagination. Religion, magic, and superstition were kind of all related in his mind, because he believed that they all resulted from just human beings misunderstanding the real causes behind nature and why it does the things that it does. And by the middle of the 19th century, Feuerbach was kind of like getting his way, because the rest of the masses began to think along the same lines, that this kind of stuff is all stuff that exists in the human mind and it's not really real. Science was sort of gaining authority. Social scientists were studying superstition as this psychological phenomenon instead of this phenomenon that was actually a part of the world that they were a part of. Scholars were studying magic, and they were essentially saying the same thing. This whole superstition, magic, religion thing is kind of a mental disease. It's kind of something that's not real, and that everybody who believes in it is stupid. Now, because both magic and superstition were blamed on similar errors in what they call logic and reasoning, the two ideas increasingly became interchangeable until people couldn't really tell the difference between what superstition was and what magic was. And just to clear that bit up, superstition kind of refers to this irrational belief or practice that's connected to like specific actions of events and whether those things are good or bad luck, while magic kind of involves practices to control supernatural forces or to influence events directly. Essentially, superstition is about belief in luck, whereas magic is more like actively trying to manipulate outcomes. Our magic essentially comes from somewhere, and superstition is like reading signs, like stuff like that, but not actually producing a result. Magic produces a result. Superstition interprets signs. That's basically what it is, okay? So, if you take religion, superstition, and magic, and you think about it from the perspective of these guys, they're just different expressions of the same basic problem, according to them. Humanity trying to explain things that it didn't even understand. 19th century anthropology also mirrored this. It followed a similar path. In the book Primitive Culture from 1871, which is really interesting how a lot of this stuff is coming out of these like mid-late 1800s, because this is when science began adopting occult practices and then renaming them and trying to move away from the concept of God altogether and into this concept that we evolved from apes and stuff like that.
Got stubborn spots? Unwanted hair or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
But in 1871, this guy, Edward Burnett Tylor, he described magic as something that survived from earlier stages of civilization. And he sometimes avoided calling these surviving beliefs superstitions simply because the word, it kind of carried too much negative baggage in the day. But his basic argument was that magic belonged to some kind of older worldview that modern educated society had just outgrown. Like, it was like we put our imaginary friends away and decided that we're no longer interested in any of that. The problem was that magic never seemed to actually disappear. And so his theory was being disproven in real time because people were continuing to practice and believe in magic and religion and superstition and all this stuff. When you see modern occultism, modern paganism today, it's the same thing as ancient magic. Sure, maybe it's a little bit more evolved. Maybe it's a little bit of a different look or flavor, but it's the same thing. And in many ways, it's the same basic thing that we see in like CIA experiments and mind control ops and touchless torture. And I'm not gonna like say it too loudly, but like AI, that's like, it's all kind of like, they all have the same vibe. Magic has simply adapted itself to a supposedly disenchanted world. We became disenchanted, but that didn't remove the magic. The magic was still there. And this is where the idea of disenchantment becomes really important. I want to flesh this out. Modern occultists have had to answer a pretty simple problem. And their problem is, how do you continue believing in magic while living in a civilization that is dominated by science? I mean, the answer to the problem is, well, we just don't believe that they are telling the truth when they talk about what science is, because they're just taking all of our concepts and giving them sciencey names. And so we are allowed to continue because in a similar fashion, science believes what we believe. There's a scholar named Wouter J. Honegroff, and he spent considerable amounts of time trying to examine this question. And he says that the modern magic didn't collapse when confronted by science. It adapted. It began to evolve alongside science. Older Renaissance magical systems, they treated the supernatural very literally. You can look in, you know, you can look, you got the Renaissance, the medieval ages, you've got antiquity, you've got all of these different times when magic was in, and the supernatural entities and beings that inhabited the realm of magic were quite literally believed to walk upon the planet and be wielded, and people were burning witches and all this kind of stuff. There were invisible forces connecting different things. There was an invisible spiritual substance that was sometimes described as spiritus or anima mundi. You may have heard of that term before. Angels, demons, spiritual intelligences, cryptids, gods, invisible relationships between objects. They were all considered actually real. It wasn't just some figurative concept. It was real. And then after the Enlightenment, yeah, some occultists began changing how they explained these things so that they didn't get burned at the stake and like stuff like this, like literally and figuratively. Okay? Angels and demons, well, I guess they could become symbols. Magical correspondences, we could call them psychological tools. Rituals, well, I guess we could consider those maybe techniques or experiments for changing consciousness. And I guess the supernatural, yeah, it could survive modernity by changing the language that we use to describe it. Magic became a science because science became so powerful that it wanted to explain it away. But instead, the phenomenon that we got is that they were the same thing, and so they joined hands and began to evolve together as one. This is the point. This is the point that I'm trying to get across, because the institutions began to come to the conclusion that they could not kill magic and they could not disprove magic. And that, as a matter of fact, if we just adapt to magic as magic is adapting to us, it actually proves our experimental points. It actually proves our theologies and our ideas. Because, coincidentally, magic and science have a lot in common. Are you following me? Hopefully, we're on the same page at least a little bit. But I understand that coming from me, you're probably just distracted by this flintlock in my waistband. Yes, somebody asked in the last video, is that a flintlock in your pants, or are you just happy to see me? And yeah, it is, and I am, baby.
All right.
Anyway, where was I? Enough about my waistline. This whole process of magic slowly sort of evolving into science and vice versa has been called the secularization of esotericism, which is a little bit of a tongue twister, but it's a perfect way to describe it. One of the easiest ways to accomplish this was to move magic inside the brain and make it a neurological issue. Instead of saying that an angel or a demon is literally standing outside your door waiting to come in, a modern occultist might say that the angel or the demon represents part of your consciousness. This is where like a lot of New Age stuff comes from, which is important for later because it's the New Age movement that has ultimately taken over pretty much everything. Okay, this New Age magic movement is pretty much what all new cults are coming out of, and even what, you know, governments wield upon the people and how they control religion and stuff like that. And in this space, like I kind of already said, the magic becomes part of your psychology, part of your chemicals. The demons are now internal forces, and the angels are higher parts of the self, or whatever you want to say. The spiritual transformation becomes achieving this higher version of yourself. The mystery is just It's just been relocated from the universe all around us, space and time and everywhere, behind the thing and under the bed and in the woods and you know, on the mountain and in the desert. And now it is all compartmentalized, locked away in your little human mind. But there's another interpretation. Some scholars describe what is happening not as disenchantment, but as re-enchantment. And I think both things happened. I think we went through a disenchantment era when I said we did, and we lived in this brief period, like the late mid 1800s to basically very recently, and now we are entering into a re-enchantment era. Now, from this perspective, occultists, they're not abandoning supernatural ideas at all. They're simply translating them into modern scientific and psychological language. There's a researcher, her name is Tanya Luhrmann, okay? And she observed that many modern ritual magicians believe in something like an astral plane. You've probably heard of this before. Yeah, a lot of people believe that we do exist on an astral plane, and it's not necessarily even an occult belief, really. Maybe it is. I don't really know. It's kind of up in the air. Sometimes it comes up in like the flat earth conversation and stuff like that. But this astral plane is another realm that is separate from ordinary reality, but still connected to it in some way. If ritual is performed in this invisible world and it can affect events in our physical world, then magic is essentially proven. Then the supernatural has not been reduced to psychology, and magic is real. It's still magic, just as it's always been magic. The spells are still spells, and magic becomes an actual tool that individuals will use. Christopher Partridge argues something similar. He's another one of these guys who studies this. I pulled all of this from this collection of books on the matter, by the way. So for everybody who's like, why, how does he come up with all these names? I'm not just making them up on the fly. Although, if I was, you probably wouldn't know. But if you look up any of these names, you'll find out these guys are all researchers, psychologists, scientists, theologists, philosophers. These are all guys and gals, good old guys and gals who did the research. And I am just the messenger. But he says that no matter how modern the vocabulary becomes regarding this kind of stuff, many occultists still inhabit what is basically an enchanted universe. They may talk about psychology or consciousness, archetype frequencies and subconscious programming, stuff like this. All stuff that the CIA also talks about in their remote viewing and their MKUltra mind control programs and their out-of-body experiences they can control, all this kind of stuff, right? Like, it's really bizarre how you can connect these dots the more you read about this stuff. The more you read about occult magic and stuff like this, occult paganism, magic, sorcery, witchcraft, religion, the more you read about this kind of stuff, the more it looks like, oh, it's the CIA, it's psychology, it's holy cow, they have just turned science into magic and vice versa. But underneath all of this updated lingo, all of this new terminology, there still exists the ancient belief that these invisible forces, these spiritual entities, can influence our visible reality. And this creates something that Partridge calls occulture. Occult beliefs are not disappearing. They're spreading through culture while changing their appearance. Instead of thinking about modern magic as one clearly defined phenomenon, a witch with a little stick or a wizard on a broom or whatever, maybe it's the opposite way around, it may make more sense to look at how occult ideas move between different parts of society. And by doing that, you examine science, religion, and psychology, philosophy, art, entertainment, look at Disney, all this kind of stuff. You look at the pop culture. The terminology changes depending on where the idea is being presented, just like you get a different religion based on where you are in the world. So to wrap it up and put a little bow on it, people may disagree about what magic is, but they probably still agree that magic works. See what I'm saying here? And that disagreement naturally creates constant arguments over who actually understands these traditions, who's trying to make it what it isn't, who's trying to keep it what it is but redefine it, or which version is good, which version is bad, what the old texts really mean, you know, what counts as authentic occult practice or magic, and what is just a sleight of hand or a trick, and what is actual psychological tampering versus what is actual magic. In my last video, I talked about how the CIA, along with their magicians and soldiers, because they do hire both. They employ both magicians and soldiers. This is not up for debate. It's actually proven in all of the MKUltra stuff and other programs that they've got going on too. But they experimented with projecting sound and manipulating consciousness in ways that were associated with things like amnesia and dissociation and what could basically be described as like attempts at extreme mind control. Turning people into zombies, making them do things, and then those people don't have any recollection of those things at all. They might not do things, but because they were in a state of amnesia, they are easily manipulable to believing that they did things that they didn't do, driving people crazy, putting them out of their mind, having physical effects on their actual body without even touching them. And some of this is technology, right? So the CIA also has stuff where they can actually have a cause and it creates an effect and it's not magic. But some of their stuff really walks the line, especially when they openly admit to being like employers of magicians and sorcerers, and they actually talk about magic and they actually employ like people who could give them insight on demonology and how to produce magical effects and how to control populations that are under the control of religion and all that kind of stuff, then it really does become like magic. Like, we can call it what it is. Like, we can see something as two things at the same time. They use tech and they use magic. Any organization who could employ both would, right? And this becomes particularly interesting, especially in regards to science, like rocket-based science, space-based science, mind control and sound-based science, because we enter into the realm of Enochian magic, as in like Enoch.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first laser center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
In Enochian magic, the rhythm matters. It's a sound-based magic, essentially. The sequence of words being spoken matters. The tone being spoken in matters. The whole emotional effect matters. And writers within these traditions who have studied this Enochian magic, they describe it as an ancient magical language whose combination of meaning and sound could supposedly create powerful reactions. And whether you believe that supernatural claim or not, it's almost secondary to the point that I'm trying to make, which is that the sound itself is treated as a tool. And a lot of people in modern society these days believe that the music industry is satanic. If you watch Izzy, if you watch, you know, Sam Tripoli, if you watch any of these people who are involved with Hollywood or the music industry or any of that kind of stuff, they will tell you the music is satanic. There are spells in the sounds that they make. There's spells in the scripts. There's spells in the beats. There's spells in the lyrics. There's spells in the dances. Look at any of these super like weird pop stars we've got now. I mean, you can even look at Lady Gaga, look at Sofia Ezella or whatever her name is. Look at Taylor Swift. Like look at I'm really bad with my pop stars. I actually don't really listen to music anymore. I used to listen to music a lot, but there's something that I don't know. I just don't listen to a ton of music anymore. I usually am just reading instead, I guess. I don't know. Or sitting in silence and musing. What is her name? Queen Bee, people. Queen Bee. What's her name? Beyonce. Look at Jay-Z. Look at these people. Look at Eminem. Like, a lot of these people are actually believed to have satanic influence emanating, magic, permeating their sort of thing, their system here, their musical system. It's considered Enochian magic. And that's interesting because it does indeed move magic away from simply asking, is this ancient language authentic? And more toward a much more practical question, which is, what does this sound do to the person that is hearing or speaking it? And the CIA has done extensive research on this. You can go watch my last video to get a really good in-depth understanding of what I mean when I say that. But they have experimented with the ways that sound can manipulate the human mind to the point that it's not even like they've mastered it. They can make you do anything with sound. They can change your brain with it. They did it, they do it. And that overlap right there between magic and method appears in none other than somebody that you've probably heard of, Jack Parsons. Near the end of his life, Parsons wrote about his early fascination with chemistry and science existing alongside what he described as his magical awakening. He's basically like one of the people who influenced Scientology to come into being. He was like one of the greatest American rocket scientists that we had. He believed he opened a portal in the desert and pulled out a demon or something that was supposed to take over the world. I've done an episode on it as well, but he's just a crazy scientist who was also deeply involved in the occult. And Parsons, you know, deeply believed that the scientific method could be applied to magical practice. That's very important. When scientists, I mean, look at what's going on at CERN. When scientists are like literally saying it, it's not a conspiracy theory anymore. Like, when scientists are like, no, it was the occult reasoning and the occult logic and the occult understanding that actually helped us achieve our results in science. It's like, bitch, you're just doing magic. You can call it whatever you want. Jack Parsons wasn't treating science like some kind of worldview that disproved magic. He treated science as a method of magic. Observe, experiment, and repeat, record, and then change the procedure till it works again. Parsons moved constantly between the worlds of this advanced rocketry he was working on and occult religion, but he also wasn't alone in this approach, I should add. Many modern occultists have described magic almost as an applied science that involves sophisticated procedures and rituals and materials, as well as timing and experiments, just like you would find in regular science. Also, I might add, Aleister Crowley strongly influenced Parsons here. Crowley approached magic in a surprisingly experimental way, and he placed the scientific method at the center of the Thelemic Mystery School that he created before later reshaping the Ordo Templi Orientis. Its famous motto was the method of science, the aim of religion. And I don't think I need to tell you how big of a deal Aleister Crowley was. But that very sentence, the method of science, the aim of religion, it literally summarizes the entire concept we're going over here. Use scientific methods to pursue religious or magical goals. There's a scholar, Olav Hammer. He identifies three major ways that modern esoteric movements try to give themselves a legitimacy. The first one is tradition. The second one is experience. And what do you think the last one is? It's science. Science is probably the most interesting, but I think tradition is also interesting. These occult movements frequently borrow scientific language to make esoteric claims sound more believable. To me, it's just not believable that all of humanity just outgrew witchcraft and magic. It, you know, like when you look at the kings and the presidents and the leaders today, they don't have their resident magicians that come out of the back corner to advise them or tell them what weaponry they could use or perhaps give them insight on how to proceed with their strategies. But not too far in our past, kings did have that stuff. Governments did have that stuff. They did have their seers. They did have their witches. They did have their wizards. They did have their magicians. So what's more believable, that humanity just all together at the same time outgrew this, or that we just started calling it something different because we outgrew the language? The language evolved, and the concept had to evolve because we were manipulated. We were trained to believe that something like that could not exist because we as humans, we as lowly peons, peasants of the realm, we needed to be in a state of ignorance where it would appear that the magic, the power, the strength, the mysteries, the knowledge, it's coming from the governments, not from the magic itself. You can't go out into the woods and figure out the truth of life yourself. But we, in the scientific community, we can tell you, you're a monkey. You came from monkey. You act like monkey. Now, monkey, go work. That's what they say. But you can see how dehumanizing that is. It's because they need the general populace to feel like the governments themselves are their only way out of all of this. The governments themselves are the hand that feeds, the knowledge that teaches, and for all intents and purposes, the God above them. Theosophy did this with what is called esoteric science. These groups, they sometimes criticize mainstream science, but they simultaneously use scientific discoveries to support their own beliefs. If you look at Blavatsky, for example, she connected ideas about cosmic vibrations, the fifth element, right? Akasha and anima mundi with the scientific theory of the luminiferous ether. The scientific theory was eventually abandoned. Modern occult movements, they found newer scientific ideas to use. And today, you're more likely to hear references to quantum physics or quantum consciousness, right? Energy fields and dimensions and frequencies and all this kind of stuff. But the scientific vocabulary changes to fit the scientific age. Okay, so I released a lot of videos on MKUltra and the CIA, and there's also just a ton of them on YouTube in general. You can research the CIA through the CIA reading room. There's 1,000 different ways you can get this information. It's not really what this episode is about. But the drug experiments of the CIA, as heard about through the MKUltra stuff, all that became infamous for potentially containing elements of magic and sorcery and stuff like that. And so I'll brief over it real quick before we move on. Some of the most important results of that research actually came from behavioral research that was conducted through universities, major universities, including Harvard, Princeton, Yale, basically wherever there were scientists and philosophers hard at work. So instead of relying on the obvious physical violence that could break a man, these researchers, these scientists and philosophers, they essentially became increasingly interested in breaking a person without ever touching them. And you can see the training in this, on this in the CIA's Kubark interrogation manual, then again in the training handbook connected to Honduras from 1983. You can see it in later interrogation policies used during the War on Terror, especially at like Abu Ghraib. And then, of course, Guantanamo, which it allegedly refined these techniques by attacking both prisoners' individual identity as well as their cultural identity. And what they built was basically this very foolproof, this very real and practical no-touch torture system. And it involved this sensory disorientation, which would basically include alternating between sensory overload and sensory deprivation, isolation, and then intense interrogation following that isolation, heat and cold, you know, back to back to back to back, light and darkness, noise and silence. And then there was also this element of self-inflicted pain, which to do this, you would place prisoners into positions where their own bodies become the source of their pain. The positions that they're in force them to comply or change their minds somehow. Together, obviously, these techniques can create a pretty strange psychological effect. I've seen it with my own eyes. Instead of experiencing pain as something simply being done to them, prisoners begin to experience their own bodies and minds as part of the mechanism producing their suffering. Just think about this on a societal level. Think about this on a national level. How can you imagine this being done to you without the obvious, obviously, if when I say Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo, you might have a picture flash in your brain. But think outside the box. How could this be happening to you? How could you be experiencing some sort of element of psychological no-touch torture without even really thinking about it from that perspective? Your body becoming the source of your torture. Your mind becoming a source of your torture somehow. Instead of experiencing pain, how can you feel as if you are the pain unto yourself? And where does that feeling come from? Because that feeling can destroy a person's sense of control. Even their desire to seek a better life or seek a solution. That pain can destroy them to the point where they are malleable and manipulable. This combination of torture, these torture methods, can literally break the basic foundations of a person's identity, and it can make them completely confused about who they are and who they should be, what they once were, etc., etc. The CIA began to create processes through which they could alter a person's reality, and then a group's reality, and then potentially a nation's reality. And they experimented on Cuba, they experimented on other nations, so that they could take the research that they learned from the MKUltra programs, where they were able to no-touch manipulate one single person, and see if they could do this with a whole group, see if they could do this with a country, and it turns out that they could. Psychotherapist Otto Dor Zegers found that torture survivors could develop extreme distrust that bordered on paranoia without even being touched. Some also experienced a deep loss of interest, of exhaustion, the inability to concentrate. And these effects might last long after the immediate torture ended. I bet a lot of people just coming home from a day of work that shouldn't exhaust them or make them lose interest in regular life, or I bet a lot of people who are taking drugs or going through situations that cause them to be unable to concentrate or focus on life, I bet a lot of people are experiencing these types of things. Do you think this could be an element of this project, of these projects conducted by these magicians and individuals who might be trying to alter reality?
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural, because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If you look at Project Chickwit, where they were taking all the drugs from all over the world and experimenting with them on people to see if they could get people to enter into different states of minds, then you might say yes. The important part of all of this is what torture does to someone's understanding of reality itself. It's better if a tortured person is able to remain a person. You don't just, typically people don't just torture to torture. That's like, you know, there are people who do, but generally when it comes to intelligence agencies, they're doing it to get something out of you. They're doing it to get a desired result. So the way that you understand reality is very important to an interrogator. It's very important to an operator and a handler. It's extremely important because if they can control your reality and how you perceive it, they can control you. Now we're going to start getting into the really nitty gritty. You can say that the stuff with that I just mentioned with the CIA and their programs and the torture and all that kind of stuff. Well, dude, that's just people doing weird stuff to people, causing physical harm, using technology. That's not magic. And I could find it in my heart to agree with you. There's more. Modern medicine has scientifically demonstrated something that, from another cultural perspective, can look remarkably similar to enchantment. There's that word again. And what I'm referring to here is the placebo and the nocebo effects. Perhaps one of the most bizarre cases of the placebo effect was published in General Hospital Psychiatry in 2007. Four doctors basically published one of the strangest placebo cases in modern medical literature. This patient, who is identified in the paper as Mr. A, he was this 26-year-old guy, and he had been suffering from depression for months after the breakdown of a relationship. It didn't go his way, and he was not able to cope. So he saw an advertisement from a large university recruiting people for a clinical trial of a new antidepressant. And he enrolled because he believed that the experimental medication, it might actually represent some kind of breakthrough treatment. And there was just one important little detail that he didn't know. It was a double-blind trial. So some participants received the real antidepressant and others received completely inactive placebo capsules with no medication in it. Mr. A did not know which group he was in, and neither did the people who were interacting with him, the people who were giving him the medication. So I'm sure you can piece it together. He didn't get the actual drug. During the first month, something interesting happened, though. He believed the medication was working. His mood improved considerably, despite the fact that, as would later be discovered, he was taking the placebo. And then, after beginning the second month of the trial, he had another argument with his girlfriend or ex-girlfriend or whatever. And in a moment of desperation, what does Mr. A do? He swallows every capsule remaining in the bottle, 29 capsules. And almost immediately, he regretted it and became convinced that he had just taken a massive amount of drugs that would lead to an overdose that would end with his death. Okay? So he asked his neighbor to drive him to the hospital, and when he reached the emergency room, he reportedly approached the receiving clerk and said, "Help me, I took all my pills," and then collapsed. An empty prescription bottle was with him at the time. The label identified the capsules as medication from this clinical trial, right? But because the study was blinded, they weren't really sure what it was. The hospital couldn't tell whether he had swallowed the real drug or the placebo. Then his body began presenting doctors with something that was even harder to ignore than the fear that he was experiencing, because the fear is understandable. You know, when you're on death's door, for anybody who's ever been on death's door, it's pretty horrifying and it leads people to do strange things. But in Mr. A's case, he was actually portraying physical side effects, I guess you could say. He was pale. He was sweating very heavily. He was trembling. He was breathing rapidly. He was lethargic. His heart rate was 110 beats per minute, and his blood pressure had fallen to approximately 80 over 40. That's like a genuine state of hypotension. So doctors gave him an IV and they began pumping this saline solution into him while searching for an explanation for what was going on, because he wasn't displaying any drugs in his system. They couldn't find anything in him. His urine drug screen was negative. All laboratory testing was proving that he was actually within normal limits of everything that he could possibly be within normal limits of. And he wasn't taking any other drugs. And so everybody was just kind of like, dude, what did you take? Because we're not seeing anything in your system. And they gave him 2 liters of this intravenous saline, and his blood pressure improved. But when doctors slowed the IV intrusion, his blood pressure began falling again. So over the course of like 4 hours, Mr. A received approximately 6 liters of IV fluid. And even after all of that, he remained lethargic. Doctors were like, what is going on? This was a true case of house, right? His blood pressure was still only around 100 over 62. His heart rate remained elevated at 106 beats per minute. This guy believed he was gonna die. But then a physician associated with the antidepressant trial arrived at the hospital. And you know what he said? Dude, you took placebos. You didn't even get the drug. You're not overdosing. All 29 capsules were completely inert. There was no experimental antidepressant in them at all, ever. The doctors told him, and according to the case report, Mr. A initially looked shocked and then became almost tearful with relief, as one does when they narrowly escape death. But then something extraordinary happened. Within 15 minutes, he was fully alert. His heart rate fell from 106 to 80 beats per minute. Everything went back to normal. His blood pressure was fine again. And for 4 hours, doctors had been trying to stabilize this idiot who believed that he had poisoned himself. But then somebody changed what he believed. And within 15 minutes, everything changed. He's back to normal. Everything's good. Good as new, as if none of this ever happened in the first place. This phenomenon has a name. It's called the nocebo effect. But you could call it magic. Many magics, including voodoo, operate on the premise that the individual must believe in the magic in order for it to be effective. That's why people say, you know, if you just say the name of Jesus Christ, these things vanish. That's why witches say like their spells don't work on Donald Trump, all this kind of stuff. If you don't believe in it, it has no power over you. But a spoken idea becoming physical suffering sounds remarkably similar to something that ancient civilizations might have called curses. Or magic. We call it expectation, right? We say mind over matter, which is also kind of like magic. We could go all into the MK Ultra material and the intelligence programs built around manipulating perception, constructing artificial realities. We could take this into Hollywood. We can take this into pharmaceuticals. We can take this into advertising. We could take it into politics. There's no end to the places that we can take this effect. But the answer will be the same. It's the same concept that the ancients called magic. It's the same concept that people who believe in the spiritual realm have been talking about since the dawn of mankind. It's magic. It's spells. And they want to call it, you know, propaganda or religion or social media or whatever they want to call it. There's hundreds of places where understanding what ancient people called magic becomes useful for actually understanding modern systems of influence. Sometimes the connection is extremely complicated, like intelligence agencies who are engineering psychological realities. Other times, though, it's sitting directly in front of us, like in Hollywood. There's, like, in my view, an occult network that is deeply intertwined with the entertainment and music industries, especially in the United States. And I already touched on that a little bit. But some of the people who are associated with these ideas are very public, and then others are not. For instance, like Marina Abramovich, this witch who has just overtaken Hollywood and has a little coven with her and does all the spirit cooking and everything. She spent decades moving through elite art and celebrity circles and music and cultural stuff and teaching witchcraft and even personally trained Lady Gaga before she released her Abracadabra album, which, I mean, do I need to say more? Her work repeatedly uses imagery and performances involving blood, sacrifice, children, death, pain, bodies, occult symbolism. She's a witch. And one of her most famous and controversial things is spirit cooking. It's become almost legendary in conspiracy circles because its imagery so deeply resembles ritual instructions involving blood and bodily fluids and violence and cannibalism. But then there's her elite political and entertainment industry connections, her projects in Ukraine, and the strange collection of influential people who have moved through her orbit and continue to circle around her like dancers. This is where the subject becomes extremely strange, and you can't really say it's not magic. Because whether you call Abramovich a witch, a performance artist, an occult artist, a provocateur, whatever you want to call her, you're still dealing with somebody who does magic. And even if she doesn't call it magic, she calls it art, it's still magic. Whatever, what you call it doesn't really matter if the result is the same. Whether you call it science, art, inspiration, spells, this energy, it works through people. This magical energy, it works through people. Human beings become vessels, okay? Going back to music, if we look at some of these artists, you know, like Billie Eilish, Britney Spears, Madonna, Chapel Row, Kanye West, like countless others, they are incredibly powerful cultural symbols that display elements of paganism, satanic ritual, magic. And whether every single one of them understands consciously what they're doing is another question entirely. They might just think it's aesthetic. They might just do it for the image. But the result is the same. Because whether or not they actually believe in it is kind of beside the point. The star becomes the instrument. It becomes the zombie. It becomes, you know, the system becomes the musician. And sometimes you can actually watch what happens when one of those stars crashes out of the system. Look at the decay of some of these actors and actresses and singers right now. They're literally turning into skeletons. They don't even look human anymore. They look like shriveled mannequins of themselves. What's going on here? Look at all the symbols. Look at the lyrics, the costumes, the people around them, the people they surround themselves with, their dancers, the imagery, the gods that they reference, the symbolism that they portray in their stage props, the rituals that are being imitated, the magic words that are being said in the case of like abracadabra, the themes that repeat again and again and again. And where was the CIA so deeply focused when it was experimenting with MKUltra? The music scene, Woodstock, the kids on acid, the kids at concerts. I'm telling you, you can always tie this stuff back, but you have to be willing to actually look at it. You have to be able to open your mind. At some level, art is always, you know, just an outward projection of belief. Christians will show you Christian symbols. Muslims show you Islamic symbols. Buddhists have their own, and occultists have their own. Why would popular entertainment somehow be exempt from this? It's not. I mean, just even consider the words that we call them, stars. Human beings have stared at the stars for thousands of years, looking for signs and patterns and messages, right? Warnings and the special words from gods and destinies, all this kind of stuff. Today, our cultural stars, they appear on screens, on stages, on radios, music videos, and they still provide signs and symbols and patterns, behavior for people to imitate. And it's not even, in the case of entertainment, it's not really even done that differently, because in the ancient times, a lot of magic was done performatively as well, through dance and play and theater. This is the way of the vain gods. This is the way of the vain practitioners. And this practice is continued through politics, religion, concepts of morality, identity, entertainment, even our understanding of what is normal. I don't think any of this is particularly difficult to see myself. You don't even have to accept the supernatural explanation to recognize the cultural mechanism if it really doesn't vibe with you. Just look at it for what it is, even if you don't want to, like, agree with me.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The disagreement begins when we start asking whether there is something more behind the mechanism. You have to admit that. The idea of the devil influencing the music industry has been discussed and mocked and investigated, and stories have been written about it. It's been exaggerated and turned into conspiracy theories for generations. I mean, the classic young man selling his soul to be good at guitar. It's like, look at, you know, that was recently displayed in that movie Sinners, right? That won an Oscar. Like, this is not new. What has changed is how openly occult imagery appears in mainstream entertainment and government, and how little reaction it produces from anybody anymore. But it's been happening. It been happen, okay? We don't expect the government to operate through entertainment like that. We don't expect the people who are supposed to be looking out for us manipulating us in such a sinister, hidden way. You know, we don't expect them to establish roots in our children's minds by using these pagan magical methods that have been systematically, surgically intertwined with our entertainment and our governmental structures. We don't expect them to be so evil. We expect them to operate through legal channels, through intelligence reports. But guys, it's not that world anymore. Maybe it never has been. History repeatedly gives us these examples of where religion and the occult and the unusual psychological theories and paranormal claims all enter the same space. Can esoteric belief influence actual political power? And if you got your eyes open, we already know that it can. Magic did not disappear. We just call it different things. We call it psychology. We call it consciousness research. We call it placebo. We call it TV. We call it radio. We call it religion. And sometimes people still call it exactly what people called it thousands of years ago. Magic. Thanks for watching. Hope you had a good time with this. And if I don't see ya, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.